Come over here, kid. Where's something? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of water, and you fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. Delicious. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing? And how about that eclipse, huh? I totally forgot about it and I was all caught up working at home and I noticed, wow, the light, the quality of the light really changed and just sort of paid attention to that for a while and then realized, oh, the eclipse. It was sort of a fun way to focus on it. Anyway, there you go. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you're in the house now or at least in your car listening. And we're going to do a couple different things tonight. One of them is we're going to have to beg you for money a little bit later. But I did want to tell you at the start of the hour that a really great way to either become a member of KRCB or renew your membership or get a gift membership is just to go to krcb.org and do it online. I did it online about a week ago. So it's really easy. It's really efficient. There's all the premiums that are up there if you want something in particular. We have a wonderful book as Mouthful's Premium tonight, and I will be introducing the author, our guest this evening, in just a second. But first of all, I wanted to tell you that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the changes coming to the Santa Rosa Farmers Market, leaving the original market, leaving its longtime location, and a new market going in at that location. It happened yesterday. The new location for the Santa Rosa original market is now at the Wells Fargo Center, the southeast part of the parking lot. It's a beautiful location. The market was absolutely glorious yesterday. The space is supposedly 25% smaller than the space that they've had at the Veterans Building, but it felt bigger. The market overall felt bigger, and it's just a really lovely setting. And one of the things that I think is going to end up being a real benefit is that moving there a little bit further north, very close to 101, sort of lets that market assume its position as the central Sonoma County market, which, as the first market in Sonoma County and with its original name, the Sonoma County Farmers Market, it always has been. So I think that all of the anxiety that led up to the move, all of the fear that, oh, is it going to work? I think that's all resolved. It's a great market. Then the Redwood Empire Farmers Market is the new market that opened. And for the next 2 months, month and a half, it's going to be on the west side of the Veterans Building instead of the east side. But I have to say, I like the west side better. It has a more intimate feel. I think partly because the traffic there from Brookwood, you're not exposed to that traffic that's so close when you're on the east side. So I think the managers of that market might want to think about whether it's a better location. I know it's a little bit smaller, so maybe they might even want to think about it as a better location for the Wednesday market, because the Wednesday market is always smaller, both when it comes to vendors and when it comes to customers. They're still getting their sea legs. as is true, I think, with any new restaurant, any new venture, especially something like a food venture, you need some time to get its sea legs. So I'm not going to go into detail about that market yet. Let them get, you know, find their footing first. But it seemed to be a successful launch for both the new location for the original market and the first market of Redwood Empire. So congratulations to everyone. Hope everyone is now happy. And all of the anxiety and worry and anger can just float off into the sunset and we can have fabulous farmers markets. So there you go, my thoughts. And now, returning after a very long time to Mouthful is Alice Medrick of Cocolot fame, who has written some wonderful books. She was in at Copperfields earlier today for a book signing. I believe it was Copperfields in Petaluma.
Yes, it was.
Yes. Welcome. Welcome back to Mouthful.
Thank you, Michelle. It's great to be here.
And you just look so beautiful. You look,
it's all that chocolate. Right?
It must
Thank
be.
Thank you. Thank you.
And speaking of chocolate, the book Cocolot, Extraordinary Chocolate Desserts. First of all, what year did this come out?
1970. That was my debut
70?
As a writer, cookbook writer.
Wow.
1970.
It has some of my all-time favorite photography. I could say all-time favorite food photography, but just all-time favorite photography. And this is, I love all the photographs in here. And I can name several of them, why I think they're spectacular. But the one that opens, "Tis the Season," with curls of white chocolate and cranberries with gold leaf.
Yeah,
is that right?
Well, you know, it was that time.
I know, but it's
but it's gorgeous, isn't it? It's just
gorgeous.
A centerfold of
yes.
pattern.
It just takes, every time I look at it, it makes me happy. It just makes me happy. It makes me want to eat white chocolate, too, because I don't think there's any shame in white chocolate. I love it.
Not necessarily. This is the book that taught me how much I love putting what I know and what I can do with chocolate and desserts mm-hmm. on a page in words mm-hmm. with photos in another kind of piece of art so mm-hmm. that people could read it and succeed with it and learn from it.
Yeah.
It was really the beginning of the next part of my career.
Oh, interesting. Well, you did an absolutely fabulous job.
Thank
it's
you.
Just wonderful. And I really recommend that book. If you love chocolate, you have to have it.
But you have to find it.
You have
you know,
to find
scarce.
It. It's scarce.
Yes.
I feel really lucky that I have mine. Have you tried? Do you do things like search? What is it? Ex Libris?
Well, I don't need to search because I have a couple of them.
But you're
left.
Not curious?
No. Well, I am curious. Sometimes I like to see that they're like $200
exactly,
or whatever
yeah.
it is. And okay, I've searched.
Uh-huh. So you can find it when you search?
Yes, you can.
Okay, good.
Yes,
well, I really recommend it. And you've done several books since then, and you have to
this
tell us.
This is somebody. Number eight.
And so the new book, Sinfully Easy Delicious Desserts, Quicker, Smarter Recipes by Alice Medrick. So tell us about it.
Well, you know, I started with the desserts of Cocolat, and those weren't quicker, smarter. Those were complex and involved, and some of the recipes have, you know, five interior recipes mm-hmm. and might take a home cook several days. I'm exaggerating just a teeny bit here, but they weren't quick and easy. They weren't really geared for the home cook, although surprisingly enough, a zillion home cooks bought that book, and it did very well. But at the time that I wrote that book, I also sold my company, and I was suddenly thrown into a different perspective. I was at home cooking at home and realizing that people who bake at home want, you know, less involved recipes.
Mm-hmm. Now, we should say, let's back up just a tiny bit. For people who don't know what Cocolat was, other than a fabulous book. So tell us about Cocolat.
Cocolat was a dessert shop that I created in 1970, focused on chocolate and anything else I wanted to do. But the main focus was chocolate. It started out with chocolate truffles.
And it was in Berkeley.
It was in Berkeley, right in the what was
Gourmet
called
Ghetto.
The Gourmet Ghetto. And ultimately, there were more shops, too. But it all started out with the truffle recipe that I got from my landlady in France, little tiny bite-sized bittersweet truffles. And then the larger truffles. I think mm-hmm. we're guilty for launching this huge popularity of somewhat huge truffles, I might say. But that was that whole era of the 70s and mm-hmm. into the 80s.
Yeah, I remember driving down to Cocolat. That's where that's where one went.
That is
for
where
anything
one
to
went.
Do with chocolate or any fabulous dessert.
And we had people coming from across the country and press from everywhere. It was really a magical, crazy roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm. And what year did you sell it?
I sold in 1990. And then really I started to dedicate myself to writing. And then comes the shift of point of view to the home baker, you know, simpler recipes. This book, which is seven books later, Sinfully Easy, really is even a shift in perspective from the home baker. For the first time, I started to realize that I needed a book that addressed the home cook. I think everybody who cooks sort of knows that there's a difference in the sort of brain chemistry of a person who likes pastry and baking versus a person who likes cooking.
Yeah.
It's like we learn differently. The person who likes to cook is kind of free and easy, likes to correct and taste as go, likes to throw this in and throw that in. And it's a freewheeling kind of experience. And a lot of those cooks don't like to follow a recipe and are anxious about baking or phobic about baking or scared of baking. So this was meant to be a collection of desserts for cooks. Really.
Oh, interesting.
Not for bakers, but it was meant to appeal to
with the cook in mind.
With the cook in mind. Not so much baking, although there's baking in there.
Mm-hmm.
But lots and lots of fruit desserts, lots of really easy, interesting things to do with ice cream. Lots of ice creams that don't even take an ice cream machine. Just a lot of easy breezy stuff.
Mm-hmm. And
beautiful photography.
Beautiful photography. Your books always have beautiful photography. I love it. The ice cream, looking for something I wanted to ask you about. How do you make ice cream without an ice cream freezer?
Well, you mix up. The way I've done these is you mix up the ingredients just as though you're making a smoothie, maybe in your food processor.
Mm-hmm.
You pour it out into a shallow pan until it's frozen. You chop it up in pieces, put it back in the processor, and womp it up until it's smooth and creamy and icy and like soft ice cream. Put it back in the freezer, and when it's firm enough, you scoop it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it is exactly like making a smoothie. And none of these ice creams have that scary thing about making a custard. So it's all about either yogurt or sour cream or cream and some fruit or an icy mixture of, you know, low-fat milk and lemon or lime juice and maybe some mint leaves to make sherbets and sorbets and things.
It almost sounds similar to how you make a granita.
And there's granitas, too.
I love granitas.
Yeah, granita is wonderful, and I've got the classic one with espresso or strong coffee and lemon. But then there's a very cool couple of ones in there. There's a Vietnamese coffee one and a Thai tea one that sort of deconstruct the Vietnamese coffee you get in a restaurant or the Thai tea, you know, iced coffee. So the granita is made with the tea or the coffee, and then you pour the sweet milk mixture on there. It's just like a Vietnamese coffee.
Yeah.
People adore that. And it's fun and it's beautiful to look at.
Now, you have here a section, a page on magic ingredients. Uh-huh. I immediately go to it. It's like, oh, salt. Cool.
Yeah. Oh, salt.
Salt,
exactly.
Black pepper. And I love black pepper in desserts.
Yes.
I like white pepper.
A little black pepper
too.
On a chocolate mousse changes the whole game a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of these secret ingredients are things that you put on top. And I'm very big at the put on top. About the put on top. First of all, it means that not everybody has to have it if they aren't into your secret ingredient. And secondly, when you put in an aromatic ingredient, it could be black pepper, it could be a little bit of salt, it could be a fresh grating of nutmeg or a fresh grating of cinnamon stick. You get this sort of aroma just before you eat, and it's separate from, it's not the same as mixing that flavor into the mixture. So it's a whole different, sort of a layered experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to do that.
Yeah.
And you can take ordinary chocolate cookies or chocolate brownies and grate something on there. It could be nutmeg, could be cinnamon, could be a little salt. You know, we're all into the salt now.
Yeah. You know, I used to squeeze lemon juice on my hands when I was a little girl.
Ooh.
Sprinkle salt on my hands and then go watch cartoons while I licked it off.
Ooh, early margarita.
Preparing for adulthood.
For
but you know, as I said off mic before we started, I don't really care that much for chocolate. I might eat it once a year. I should say that started to change. A friend brought me brownies on my birthday. And I was like, why is she doing that? They were salt brownies.
Oh.
And I took them because I love her and, you know, she's a Hula sister and I'm not going to, like, decline anything. But I thought I'm going to give them to my daughter and some other people. Mm-hmm. I took one bite. Oh, my gosh.
Oh.
Oh. No, I ate them all.
No, addition of salt, especially to dark chocolate, is lifting it a little bit. And we're getting used to that taste so that, I made a mousse the other day from the book, and I tasted it as I was scooping it into the dish, as anyone does, right? And I thought, it's a little flat. And I realized I had forgotten the salt.
Yeah.
It made
the whole thing blossom.
Just,
and it made it suddenly made sense in my mouth. in ways that it hadn't made sense before. Yeah.
I love the blurring between sweet and savory. It's happening in savory food, and it's happening in sweet food, too.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. Also, I love that we're doing desserts with olive oil, good olive oil.
Yes.
You know, I'm a big olive oil fan, and I feel like people need to get an education about good olive oil, and that's probably a whole other program.
Oh, yes, and we will do them.
Yes, and you should. But so there's an olive oil chocolate cake in there. So instead of butter, it's got olive oil and really lovely Scharfenberger chocolate or whatever chocolate you like. And then it gets that little flaky sea salt on the top, which kind of connects with the olive oil and the chocolate. And you can drizzle a little olive oil on it, you know, in addition. There's an olive oil pound cake in there to die for.
Oh.
I mean, simple, easy. Yeah. You know, and pound cakes can be tricky. This is not.
And we're seeing a lot of salted caramels these days, too.
Yes, so the French did that years ago. I thought it would be over by now, but it's still out there. Yeah. And it's good because the salt makes you taste the flavors in the butter a little bit better.
Yeah, the first ones I had were from France, and that was about,
gosh, 20 years ago, maybe even. Could be 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah, I think I had them for the first time in 97 or 98 when I was working on my book, Salt and Pepper.
Oh,
so
yes,
I was looking for everything.
So I have this salted caramel bread pudding in there with bananas tucked between the slices that you might enjoy sometime.
Black pepper and bananas go really beautifully together.
Very nice. I'm a big banana girl.
Yeah. I never was until, again...
the pepper?
No, Malvi Doshi. I don't know if Malvi Doshi was someone you knew. She had a restaurant in San Francisco called The Ganges. And she wrote a cookbook, Cooking Along the Ganges, I think. And then she wrote another cookbook, self-published. But I went... I knew her agent. And we went there for dinner one night. She and her husband were cooking. She brought out the whole menu. And she had bananas that were cut, say, one banana cut in three lengths and then cut in an X, you know, to sort of open it up, still in their skin. And then she stuffed them with a mixture of serranos, grated coconut, lime juice, let's see, cilantro, serranos, grated coconut, lime juice, and probably a little salt.
So this is sweet and salty.
Sweet and salty.
Spicy.
And spicy. Fried them and then served them as an appetizer. And we must have had...
Where are they? I mean, where are they? We need them.
Yes, we do. We must have had 22 different dishes. We had those as an appetizer, and we asked for them again at the end of the meal for dessert.
Oh my gosh, they were just really good.
And it's like, again, it just opened up the banana. All those other flavors just really opened it up.
Actually, I took an inspiration from an Indian side dish. It's meant for savory food. And it makes a great, like, throw-together pudding that a banana-loving kid would love, or you could serve it for dessert. I swear you could get away with serving this for dessert. All it is mashed ripe bananas, not overripe, but nice and ripe, with about an equal amount of plain yogurt, and then a teeny amount of sweetener of whatever kind you want, and some cardamom in there, and then pistachio on top, and it tastes like pudding. It tastes rich. It's so healthy. There's like nothing in there that you wouldn't want to eat if you were really watching.
Yeah,
you know, watching,
and those flavors are also wonderful.
Yeah.
Here, I just opened to a photograph of the Thai tea ice with sweet milk.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
And that's
the Thai tea is orange, probably from some dye we don't want to know about, right? And so you make this icy mixture, and it's like shave ice, only it tastes like Thai tea, and then you pour a combination of cream and sweetened condensed milk, just the way you would do it if you were having Thai tea in the restaurant over there. So you're getting this icy, bitter thing, and then this sweet, creamy thing.
It looks in the glass, it looks so totally refreshing.
Right. And so the stout float. I mean, there's a lot of really comfy, accessible things that people know about, but there's also some things that we, because we're in the sort of food world, know about, but a lot of people do not. Like a stout float, for example.
Yeah.
Just like a root beer float, only it's got a little chocolate syrup and Kahlua and a scoop of ice cream, and then you pour it up with Guinness or some dark, you know,
Star
or porter. It's maybe a little whipped cream on top, another drizzle of chocolate sauce if you want. It's totally, I mean, it could be a great soda fountain drink, but I mean, you make a short one, and it could be dessert after dinner. It would be at my house.
Yeah, it sounds really good. And you've also got coconut lime sherbet, which that just sounds...
It's refreshing and delicious.
It sounds totally
refreshing.
You
know, some of these sherbety mixtures there, they're either made with milk or, in this case, it's coconut milk. And what I've learned over the years is that the most refreshing versions are made with either low-fat milk instead of whole milk. I mean, everybody always thinks that more rich is better, but... Sometimes less rich.
Yeah, with
better.
Dessert,
bigger
it's
flavor.
More refreshing.
It's more refreshing, and certainly with the iced things. Mm-hmm. And so with the coconut and lime thing, the same thing is true. The light coconut milk or low-fat coconut, whatever they call that can of coconut milk
right.
that isn't full fat, is the better one. It has more coconut flavor. It has a nicer texture. It has a more refreshing effect.
I think on that note, we're going to take a little musical break, and we're going to come back and talk about this most gorgeous platter of dessert sitting in front of us. What you hear on KRCB is patchwork programming, squares of time devoted to a kaleidoscope of music and talk. But I don't think of KRCB as a patchwork quilt. To me, it's a candy store. There's Freight Train Boogies, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Jazz Connections Nut Clusters, Radio Free Sonoma's Zots, Pillow Storms Pop Rocks, Holy Cow's Goody Gumdrops, Lady Spins the Blues Molasses Taffy, Performance Today's Pettifors, Living Proof's Dove Milk Chocolate Hearts, Red Shoes Rodeo is a licorice whip, Mouthful a Lollipop, Rhythm and Roots a Sugar Daddy, Beyond and Back Black Licorice, Our Roots are Showing a Peanut-Filled Caramel, This American Life's Obviously Cracker Jacks. You can ensure your candy store will always be open at 707-584-2020 or krcb.org/donate. It's KRCB, keeping the lick in public radio.
Coconut, he bought it for a dime. His sister had another one. She paid it for the lime. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank them both up. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank them both up. She put the lime in the coconut. She drank them both up. Put the lime in the coconut. She called the doctor, woke him up. I said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, to relieve his bellyache. I said, doctor, street. You put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut, you drink them both up. Put the lime in the coconut, you call a doctor, woke them up. Say, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor, you relieve this bellyache. I said, doctor, ain't there nothing I can take? I said, doctor.
Do you ever say ooh la la or oh my goodness when you're listening to KRCB Radio? We want to tell you about an ooh la la experience from Sift Cupcake and Dessert Bar, which you can have for your very own as part of our basic package of membership when you donate to KRCB. We'll send you a coupon for one of Sift's new ice cream sammies, organic ice cream sandwich between two chewy cookies. This is where the oh my goodness comes in. And there are four amazing flavor choices to choose from. Become a KRCB member at the $40 level or above, and we'll send you our basic membership package of tailor-made organic coffee, a KRCB Curiously Original Radio Magnet, and the delicious new Sift Ice Cream Sammy. Call 707-584-2020 or go online to krcb.org/donate. Taste buds, get ready.
And we're back. It's Michelle. Thanks for tuning with us. I am here with, oh, she's such a sweetie, Alice Medrick. The book, Sinfully Easy Delicious Desserts, Quicker, Smarter Recipes. If you like desserts and you like to spend any time at all in the kitchen, you want this book. You really do. It's also a good gift if you know somebody who likes to cook or somebody who's wanting to cook and maybe is intimidated by it. This is just a really accessible, it's very generous in that way.
Yeah, and I think of it as something for new cooks or old cooks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's simple but not simple-minded.
Yeah.
It's easy but it's not dumbed down.
Exactly. It's definitely not dumbed down. I can't imagine you ever dumbing anything down. You're just not that kind of person.
It's streamlined, you know.
Yeah, streamlined.
It's streamlined.
To me, that means that's accessible.
Right.
It's not, you can look at it and think, oh, you know, I don't have to think about all the stuff I have to get done. I can just do this.
Right.
So tell us what you brought.
Well, on this platter, this is some of the stuff we had at Copperfields earlier on, and I had to snag some away for you. There are little slices of an almond cake. This is very classic almond, you know, sweet, rich almond thing that tastes better if you make it a day or two in advance. It stands on its own. It tastes like a little French financier, those little elegant pastries. Mm-hmm. Tastes good on its own, loves any kind of fruit and cream or sautéed cherries or little fruit compote mixtures that you might have. What I did in this book is I have everything stands alone pretty much, but then many things can mix and mingle, sort of like separates in your closet. Anyway, this is made in the food processor. You start with whole nuts, grind them up, throw everything else in there, womp it up in the food processor for a couple of seconds. It's done before your oven is preheated, which means you have to wait. You have to preheat the oven and wait, you know, for a few minutes. It's that easy. It's very sophisticated. I've got a scatter of raspberries on it. Right now, you could serve it with ice cream. You could
have another raspberry.
Yeah, have another raspberry.
The first one,
and it lasts. And you can do a hazelnut version. And then because I love all those Middle Eastern flavors, you can do one that's got a little bit of orange flower water in it or rose water. It's wonderful. Or a little cinnamon and lemon zest. So, and I love the variations. I love to give you something that is like classic, good, delicious, does everything, goes everywhere, and then have a list of, you could do this, or you could do that, you could have this.
I love that. I really love recipes that do that.
Because I think that also makes people who, especially cooks, who are used to thinking up different things, think of, 10 other things they could do.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yeah, I think that's a really good good recipe writing technique.
So then these are the brown butter brownies. What I love about them is they're made with cocoa. And if you've got good cocoa, you can make a fantastic brownie with cocoa, which means you don't even have to melt chocolate. And the butter is browned first. So there's this wonderful, subtle little caramel taste, caramely taste undertone.
Browned butter
in there.
Is
brown
just
butter
such
is
a
so
great
yummy.
Thing.
Interestingly enough, when you brown the butter, you know, you drive out all the moisture first before it starts to brown. The brownies need the moisture. So one of the things that happens when you put these brownies together, you had to add back a couple teaspoons of moisture just to get the brownie to have the texture you want it to have.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting, huh? So those I love, love, love. And then, I didn't mean to bring you so much chocolate.
Everybody listening is really glad you did.
I know, but the book is filled with fruit and light and, lemon and olive raspberries and strawberries and granitas and lemon. But here's another chocolate cookie. And this one is like a brownie, only it's a cookie. It's a brownie with very little flour and you scoop it out and bake it like a cookie. And, I've used this wonderful 70% Scharfenberger bittersweet in it, and it's got a lot of nuts and some chocolate chips, and it's kind of melting your mouth.
Well, I'm going to try a brownie because, You can't pass up anything that has brown butter in it.
Yeah, you might want a little more salt on this. We'll see.
Mike, would you like a dessert?
I hope so.
I would, thank you.
Which would you like?
I think I'll try the almond.
You know,
thank you.
I always think that people who are not, like, totally, like, who don't totally crave desserts are some of the best judges.
Oh, yes, because you're contemplative. You're not, like, wolfing that down.
This is really good.
Thank you.
This is
thank
really...
you. Do you want a little salt on there?
No, for now it's fine.
No, really?
I mean, if I had some Malden salt flakes in my pocket, I would sprinkle
some. But see, also, with the salt, I love the salt. If we're going to do the salt, I want it on the top. I don't want to taste a salty brownie.
Oh,
but
no.
I want a brownie that has some little excess, little little flakes and little crunch on top.
This is really good.
Thank you.
Really good.
Thank you. Cocoa brownie. Go figure, you know.
You would not guess.
In the salt, all in the saucepan.
Now, what cocoa do you use?
Oh, Scharfenberger.
Scharfenberger. Really, okay, that's what I use.
Best, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
it's
I use.
It's natural cocoa. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. And then just some strawberries
some
to
strawberries
go with everything.
For relief. Because and because you're a fruit girl.
And because it's strawberry season.
And it is, yes, definitely it is.
So let's talk about some of the fruits that are coming up. Let's say you've got some fabulous white peaches, which happen to be one of my favorite things in the world. What do you like to do with them?
Well, you can grill them. Anybody can grill them. You can mix them with sour cream and make one of those food processor ice creams, and it's creamy and yummy. Mm. You can slice them and put them on pavlova with unsweetened whipped cream. That would be divine. Or you could, let's see, would peaches be good with coconut? Yes, why not? Sliced peaches on a coconut meringue, kind of crunchy with maybe a little either ice cream or whipped cream. In this book, I've used whipped cream a lot. Whipped cream and all the other creamy things. Whipped cream, creme fraiche, you know, yogurt, the whole gamut from light to rich and tart to sweet. Because I think they play up other flavors really well. So most of my toppings are that kind of thing, whether it's on fruit or whether it's on cake. And it means you don't have to make frosting.
Ah.
And don't we love that?
There you go.
And actually, whipped cream is better than frosting, usually, often. Yeah.
Except for a great buttercream. But that's tricky.
But no, I do have... No, I don't know what kind of great buttercream you're talking about. The classic French, yeah. I'm kind of over it.
Really?
I'm kind of over that. I suppose, depending on what the dessert is.
Yeah.
But you know the classic American thing with the box of powdered sugar and the butter that you stir in?
Oh,
I always hated that.
I've always hated that, too.
I've reinvented that a little bit so that it is a little bit more involved, but it tastes really good, and it's in this book. And it's a little bit of simmered cream and some butter, and it gets all whipped up, and it doesn't have any of that raw sugar or starch taste of the. So I'm rather proud of that. But by and large, most of the toppings here are something you get out of a carton or more.
Well, creme fraiche, and we have such good creme fraiche.
And there's mascarpone, and there's ricotta, and all of those things I love, love, love. Cherries are going to be coming up.
Yes,
there's three different ways to do cherries, all hot and fast in the sauté pan.
Oh,
one
tell
with
us.
Kirsch and a little bit of lemon. Now I'm forgetting. One with red wine. You know, I'm forgetting. Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting.
Okay.
But anyway, they're quick things. And they can be served in a dish with a cookie. Maybe it's an amaretti cookie, which there are recipes in there for, or a little nut cookie. Or it could be used to sauce this almond cake, the cherry and almond thing going. Or it could be over ice cream, or it could be, you know, what couldn't it be? It could be on the pavlova. It just could go a lot of different places.
Yeah. Yeah, if I could ever cook with cherries. I do cook with cherries every now and then, but I have a hard time getting them home.
Oh, no, no.
I start putting them in the trunk of my car. It's like, no, I'm not going
it's
to
like
pull over.
Yeah, it's gone.
Exactly. I'm not going to pull over so I can get the cherries out of the trunk.
Right,
if I put them in the trunk, they will get home. And it's the same with raspberries. Keep them in the front seat with me, and they're gone by the time I get home.
Yeah.
Well, this is how many recipes?
I have no idea.
Okay. a lot.
Somebody counted them, and it's in there somewhere. There's, I don't know. Well, there's a zillion variations, as we said.
Yeah. You count the variations, Oh, look, there's a picture.
Oh, you can dip cherries in chocolate. That's always good.
And that's a great photo.
People buy chocolate dipped strawberries, and they're usually made with the most god awful chocolate.
And
the
terrible strawberries.
And terrible strawberries. So I'm a big advocate of dipping your own, whether it's strawberries or cherries. That means you get the best strawberries, and I don't care if they're big. Big strawberries usually don't taste good.
Yeah,
often don't taste good. So whatever. There's some of those little Lucero strawberries that you can get in the farmer's market. Sometimes they have, they're teeny and they have little stems.
Stems,
adorable.
Yeah.
But even if they don't have stems or cherries, the secret to dipping fruit in chocolate is to chill the fruit, make sure it's dry, melt your chocolate, use good chocolate, favorite good chocolate, whatever that might be. And just dip that fruit, put it on a sheet pan lined with wax paper, and shove it in the refrigerator right away. The cold fruit will set the chocolate right quick, and the refrigerator, between the refrigerator and the cold fruit, it will prevent it from going gray and streaky and ugly. Serve it on the same day, and there's nothing better. There is nothing, no dipped fruit that you can buy that's better than that.
Are there other fruits that you like to, so we've done
You could
cherries.
Do a fig. You could do, you could actually stuff a fig with a little mascarpone. It's not in there, but I did it recently. It's very delicious. Stuff a fig with a little mascarpone or yogurt, something, you know, maybe even goat cheese, and dip that in chocolate. That's pretty good.
I think you could dip...
What else?
Pineapple slices.
The thing to watch out for with dipping is if it's a wet fruit.
Yeah,
that
you have
wet
to make
is
going to
contaminate the chocolate.
A friend
of mine does, Frankie Whitman, you might know her. She's a great food person.
I know her and I don't know why.
She's a fantastic cook and fantastic hostess. She one time grilled pineapple after dinner, piled it on a great plate, and threw a bunch of handfuls of chopped chocolate and just let it melt on there.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, I love grilled pineapple.
Yeah.
I tend to love grilled fruit. It's a great way to treat fruit. Well, we're going to talk to you now about how you can get this book. Got to take a little break here, Alice, to do the station's business. As you know, we are in a membership period, late spring membership period. And that's why you don't hear commercials on KRCB, because we do this now and then because it's literally your station. It is run by members. If you would like a copy of this book, and it retails for
$25.95
when you become a member or rejoin, you know, extend your membership at just the $60 a year membership. Our thank you gift to you is Sinfully Easy Delicious Desserts, Quicker, Smarter Recipes. It is really a great book. And to do that, you call 585-2020. Is that right? 585-2020.
I'm not sure what the number is.
It has to be right. I've been called, right there. Oh, 584. That's what I'm doing wrong. I'm sorry. 584-2020. You can tell I've been working too hard. I've been saying that number for years. So if you're listening outside the area at 707, area code 584-2020, you show your support for Mouthful. Mouthful has been on the air for 16 years. It's an all-volunteer effort. I volunteer my time. Our current engineer, Mike, volunteers his time. Everyone who works on the show volunteers. And over the years, I've been able to bring you fabulous guests like Alice. We're one of the, you know, there's not a lot of outlets, not a lot of programs that talk about food in depth like we do here on Mouthful. So I'm able to get people that sometimes that are here from Europe, people that are on book tour. There are still such a thing as book tours. You're on one now,
on
Alice,
one.
Which is great. So I get a lot of people who are coming through this area or coming through the Bay Area, coming up to the wine country. And I expand the boundaries of what it means to talk about food as well. I always say this is not a cooking show. Cooking is one of the topics that we discuss, but it's not a cooking show. You don't tune in every week to hear a chef, you know, tell you how to cook and plate something. It's more a conversation about everything to do with food. I have filmmakers on. I have novelists on. I can go all sciencey and geeky on you, which I do sometimes. And as we're doing today, talk about just some delightful ways to cook sweet things, which everyone loves. If you're listening, you probably know this already, so you can give us a call, 584-2020. If you don't like to talk while you're listening, you can just go to the computer. KRCB.org is a very easy way to become a member or renew your membership. And again, if you would like a copy of Sinful Easy Delicious Desserts by Alice Medrick, you pledge at the $60 a year level. You can pay by credit card. You can pay by the month. There's all kinds of ways. Just check it out on the web or talk to the person who answers your call. Mike, you have something to tell us.
Yeah, in addition to Alice's terrific book, everybody who pledges during this drive will be entered for this grand prize drawing of two nights for two at the Casa Magna Marriott Puerto Vallarta Resort and Spa in Puerto Vallarta.
Okay, I want to ask you... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Your stay is in a deluxe ocean view room with a private balcony or terrace. Four Diamond Luxury Puerto Vallarta Resort features newly decorated guest rooms and four world-class restaurants. Plus, the Casa Magna Marriott proudly holds a spot as one of the world's 100 best hotels, according to Condé Nast Traveler. So pledge today, and you can get Alice's terrific book, and you'll be eligible for this grand prize from KRCB.
Yeah, people are... I didn't mean to interrupt you. I thought you were done. I apologize. Everyone who becomes a member is entered into that. Mike, I wanted to ask you before we get back to the topic at hand today. Why do you volunteer at a radio station?
Well, I volunteer at KRCB. I've volunteered at KRCB, both on the television and the radio side. But I just can't stand commercials. I'm
with you.
I want to have a program continuous, and I don't mind. The pledge breaks make me a little bit crazy, but it has to be done when I'm listening. I understand because we're the ones that support the radio station. And you out there who are listening, we need you to pledge because without your support, we can't continue. But I volunteer because I just love the radio, and I love. I don't know.
You just like it.
Yeah, I just love.
You have a passion for radio, which is why I'm here.
Yeah. Plus, I'm a little bit of a geek, so playing with the board's a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I remember when I finally consented to learn how to do the board. I was terrified for several years, but now I do it, and I like that part as well.
Yeah.
Don't do it on my own show because if I were doing that part, I find it impossible to talk to guests and do the engineering side. I haven't gotten that far yet. Anyway, the number 584-2020, show your support for Mouthful. If you're listening, we don't have to tell you why you want to do that. So krcb.org is a really easy way. I think it's krcb.org/donate. But if you click on, if you don't see that, just click on radio and you will see donate because I did it. I know. So we're going to take a little musical break and be back with more chat with Alice. KRCB. Thanks for tuning in. I wanted to mention Alice's other books. Chewy, Gooey, Crispy, Crunchy, Melt in Your Mouth Cookies, which is a fabulous title.
It's a great title, but it was a huge pain in the neck to type out whenever you have to type it.
Oh.
But
you need to have one of those keys set up
title.
Where you could just,
boom.
Yeah. It's really a great title. And then Pure Dessert, Chocolate Holidays, Unforgettable Desserts for Every Season, Bittersweet, Recipes and Tales from a Life in Chocolate, Alice Medrick's Cookies and Brownies, Chocolate and the Art of Low-Fat Desserts, and, of course, Cocolat, which I talked to you about the fabulous photography. Do you have a favorite of these books, or is the favorite the one you're working on?
Yeah, no. You know, each one is different. Each one is a kind of different point of view or a different time in my life or a different agenda, and I'm really into it when I'm into it.
Yeah.
So that's too hard. Yeah, that's too hard.
Yeah.
I love, they are each, I mean, you could say another dessert book from Alice. Can she give it a rest? But,
each one
has a very individual, feeling to it. And
you do have a very pure take on things in the sense that it's you. You know, your things have your signature, your point of view. So one thing I'm curious about in this book, Chocolate and the Art of Low-Fat Desserts. We hear so much about low-fat.
Yeah. Well,
my ears tend to
so
shut
much
a lot
anymore.
Of it out.
Not so much. That was the time when that was really revving up. But what had happened was I was invited to teach. This is way back in the early 90s. And I had been invited to teach maybe 2 years in a row for one evening as a fundraising thing for a cancer education class. Mm-hmm. And the idea was to do some desserts that were, you know, moderate and fat and calories and all that kind of stuff. And I found it so challenging and inspiring to try to work all the good ingredients that I love and make something that felt like dessert, tasted like dessert, and was dessert without using any crappy stuff, without using any sort of substitution mentality.
Right, yes.
Without that, to use real butter, you know, real chocolate, real eggs, real nuts and all that, and just to sort of fool with it until, you know, I could eliminate a lot of the fat that wasn't doing as much work as I wanted it to do. I learned so much. First of all, the desserts in there are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's a classic. It's an iconic thing. It's hard to find. It's out of print. Did really, really well and got a Cookbook of the Year award. And not a healthy Cookbook of the Year, but a Cookbook of the Year award. Very proud of that.
Yes.
Very proud. And I learned so much about how flavor and fat work together.
Mm.
And how, you know, everybody was always saying, fat carries flavor. You got to have fat carries flavor. Well, I'm telling you, that past a certain level, fat buries flavor. So that sometimes you can get more flavor out of something by cutting back, you know, gradually till the point. There's a tipping point in there, you know, somewhere. And none of those were non-fat. It was moderate. It was cutting, you know, 25 or 30% of fat, which is quite a lot, actually.
None of it would be substituting for these ridiculous things, non-foods.
No. Good flavors, clean, wonderful flavors, quality ingredients. Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was interesting.
When you use yogurt, what kind of yogurt do you like to use?
I use plain unsweetened yogurt. Mm-hmm. And it depends what I'm doing, whether it's full fat or non-fat or low-fat.
Mm-hmm.
In my life, I eat a lot of sort of low-fat or non-fat, which means that if I want to make dessert, as soon as you switch to full-fat, it tastes like dessert. So, depending on what you do in your daily life, and it depends on what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole list of stuff, ideas for yogurt in there, different ways to combine, to combine, you know, a scoop of yogurt with some fruit, maybe a grilled or a sautéed fig, a drizzle of honey, all those little combinations. There's the yogurt dessert where you stir. And again, it depends on whether you want full fat or non-fat, but there's a fantastic little almost instantaneous dessert that tastes rich like pudding. And it's just yogurt stirred into about an equal part of a mashed ripe banana.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sweeten it a tiny bit if it needs, you know, banana's pretty sweet. A little bit of brown sugar, a little bit of maple syrup, or whatever you want, and a pinch of ground cardamom or cinnamon if you don't like cardamom, and then a little pistachios on the top.
And there you go.
If you put it in a great pudding dish, it tastes like pudding.
Yeah. I just came to the...
And it's incredibly healthy.
Really healthy. You could eat that for breakfast if you were so inclined.
Yes, you could.
I just came to a picture of the stout float, which we talked about earlier, too.
Yeah. What's great, you know, the stout float reminds me that one of the things I really like about dessert is when you change up all the flavors and textures. In the stout float, you get bitter and sweet. You get creamy and fizzy. Mm-hmm. You know, in that orange dessert that I don't know if I described it to you yet.
I don't think orange dessert. No,
you know, there's tangy and creamy and crunchy and sticky, chewy, and there's just all these things going on. Aromatic.
Now I just opened it again to another one, which to me is an iconic dessert for reasons that would probably make you roll your eyes. Chocolate mousse. Talk to us about chocolate mousse.
Well, this one that you're looking at is my friend Bill Hutton, who is the executive chef at the Teaching Kitchen at Draeger's. Mm-hmm. He gave me that recipe. It's made in a food processor. It has no eggs. You don't even have to melt the chocolate, because when you pour the hot liquid over the chocolate that's in the food processor, it melts itself, and then you fold in whipped cream. It's delicious. It has a little red wine in it, and Bill puts a little ground pepper on it.
Mm.
So there it is. It's very delicious. Yeah, it has a little bit of salt, just enough salt in it to lift it.
Yeah, it's got the red wine or liqueur and vanilla extract.
Right.
Well, the thing that I always think about is the movie Rosemary's Baby.
I don't remember. Mousse scene. Is there mousse in there?
Yes, and I have done some Rosemary's Baby dinners, and I always end with chocolate mousse because it's the chocolate mousse. Do you remember the chalky undertaste? It's when he's, her husband, Guy, is serving dinner. They're going to have an intimate dinner at home. There's a knock at the door, and it's... what's her name from, you know, next door, bring in, you know, Rosemary rolls her eyes. Oh, my God, go away. Oh, I just brought you chocolate mousse. I thought you'd like it. And one of them has the sedative. And she says she doesn't like it. And it has a chalky undertaste. And he gets really upset. And she says, oh, I'll eat it. It's wonderful. And when she knocks over her wine glass. And when he goes to get something to clean up the wine, she dumps it in the napkin her lap.
I do remember that.
And that's why she wakes up during the scene with the devil. So it's the chalky undertaste.
Well, you ought to try this one when you do your next Rosemary's Baby.
I will. This looks really...
Yeah, and it has the red wine in it and everything.
It's all right there, but it doesn't have no strong amount of sedative that I can see.
No.
So now you have... old school chocolate mousse.
Yes, and that's got eggs in
it. That has eggs.
You know, I love old school chocolate mousse, but in the old school days, we could dump a raw yolk in there in that warm mixture and just beat up the egg whites and fold it in and you were done. So it was really, really easy. Now, in order to make sure that the eggs are safe, the procedure is a little bit more, there's a few more steps in there. So I don't make it as often, and I figured it out so that those eggs get up to the right temperature, but it's just an extra step or two. And so, actually, I think Bill's food processor mousse is very viable alternative. It's creamy and wonderful. It sets up pretty quick too. Uh-huh.
Now, when we first started talking this evening, and you mentioned the chocolate truffles that launched Cocolat, they were your landlady's recipe. When did you live in France?
1972-73. I know this like the back, but we lived in France, and our landlady gave us chocolate truffles that she made. And this was a really old school recipe for chocolate truffles. It wasn't chocolate and cream the way we know it, but an old recipe that had chocolate and egg yolks and butter. And they were just, this was like no chocolate I'd ever eaten here at all. It wasn't a brownie, it wasn't an M&M, it wasn't fudge, it was nothing like that. It was this very... deeply bittersweet, smooth, little morsel with bitter cocoa on it. It was like a little poem, It was like nothing else. And I asked her for the recipe when we moved back to Berkeley.
Now, how long? You lived there for a couple of years?
A year. A year.
Why?
Husband had a postdoc job there.
Oh, okay.
Poor me. I had to go to France.
Oh, you had to go live in France.
I didn't have a visa to work, so I couldn't work.
So you went to markets during the day?
I went to the market. I cooked. I wandered around one of the great cities of the world. I studied French, studied a little bit of home cooking, and I absorbed a lot about food and cooking and life in France. Changed my life.
Absolutely. Any trip to France, and even not even just a trip to France. I think a trip to French. If you study French,
if you study French,
I was in an odd program. I studied French in fourth, fifth, and sixth grade in a school in Vallejo. Uh-huh. Who would guess? And it completely transformed my view of the world. I eventually went to France, but just having that language at that early age opened up the world in a way the world would not have opened at that point.
You know, I think in that time, or even in this time, one of the important things is about going to France was to stay long enough to realize that French food was not just three-star food.
Right,
The extraordinary belief in simplicity, the really good produce, the fabulous peach, that all of that stuff that just basically on the ground, the great chicken. Throw it in the oven and roast it. Put it in a pot with water and make chicken soup out of whatever it is. It was like nothing you'd ever tasted.
Yeah, it's amazing. We are just about out of time. Are you going to be doing any more book signings, classes near here?
I'm winding up. I'm going to San Diego tomorrow morning in Los Angeles, and I am teaching at Drager's.
Oh, Drager's, great.
Thursday in Menlo. I'm teaching at Drager's.
Drager's.
Yeah.
South of here.
Yeah, south of here. And I'm teaching, well, this is down lower at Westlake Village, which is down in Lower California, you know, down in the middle above LA, on Tuesday night.
So they are keeping you busy on the book tour.
Yeah, then I have a little bit of a break for a while. And there'll be more.
Yeah, and then you have a book we won't talk about yet until it's out. Will you come back when the next book is out?
I will. Ask me.
I definitely will. Well, Alice, it's really great to see you. Thank you for these beautiful desserts. That chocolate brownie is so good. I wish you great success. I can't imagine that it won't be hugely successful because your books are wonderful. And have a great rest of the book tour.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you. It's been
great
such a
to
long
see
time.
You. And now that Mouthful's wrapping up, if you haven't done so, you can give us a call, 584-2020, or you can go to krcb.org and pledge, and you'll be done before it's time for Outbeat. That's how fast it is. Be sure to meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. Have a great week. Take care of yourself and visit your local farmer's market.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too, and he'll sing to the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. Time for dinner now, let's go. Got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
So Lord, let praise be.
Let it be.
It's time for dinner now, let's go.
We got some,
we got some beans and good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says.
So
to the Lord, praise be.
Praise be.
Some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
dinner now. Let's go.